This is a People First Radio podcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
This year, the Government of Canada, in partnership with 30 communities across the country, is leading the first broadly coordinated point-in-time count of homelessness. Participating communities are following a common methodology. Between January 1st and April 30th, communities will select a 24-hour period during which they will survey and enumerate all of the individuals in their community who are, at that time, sleeping in shelters, on the streets, and in other public locations.
Jesse Donaldson is the National Point in Time Count Coordinator, and Jesse works for the Canadian Observatory on Homelessness at York University. She assists communities that have questions about planning, partnerships, and implementation. I spoke with Jesse Donaldson earlier this week. Give us a brief sense of what a point in time count is.
Point in time counts, they look a bit differently in every community, but there are some common elements. So over a 24-hour period, the number of individuals experiencing homelessness in the community are counted, and also given the option to participate in a short survey. So the 2016 Coordinated Count Survey asked questions pertaining to family status, age, gender, and also the experiences of homelessness. I think it's worth noting that there's different types of homelessness and different living situations. So communities participating in the 2016 coordinated count must enumerate sheltered and unsheltered homelessness. So that's individuals staying in emergency shelters, short-term or fixed-term transitional housing, but also outdoors and in public spaces. Some communities have opted to include other forms of homelessness. So couch surfing, people who are staying with friends and family temporarily, but the main pick count living situations are sheltered and unsheltered homelessness.
What are the mechanisms for actually undertaking the count? And you said they differ from community to community in terms of the content. Does the mechanism change?
It depends. It can. So some communities use volunteers. So a group of volunteers will go out and literally walk the streets and go to emergency shelters and ask people if they want to participate in a survey. Some communities use service workers or other people in the community, professionals in the community, to do a similar process.
What are the benefits of using a point-in-time approach to count homeless numbers?
Twofold. Locally, I think the greatest benefit is to measure progress towards ending homelessness. So this isn't just about collecting data. It is a research exercise, but it's more than that. I think it's about asking ourselves, is what we're doing working? Are we addressing certain types of homelessness better than others? Are there trends that we can see? Are things going up? Are things going down? So when you conduct counts, successive counts, you can start to see whether it's working, your interventions. But then nationally, I think a coordinated approach allows us to better understand the bigger picture. So in 2016, 30 communities will use the same count survey and coordinated approach, which allows us to better aggregate data. We can do it at a national level. We can do it at a provincial or regional level. So that's important.
I gather that that's something that's changed. Is it not the first time this year that these counts have been coordinated across Canada?
So in 2014, Alberta conducted what we'll call the first coordinated count, and that was seven cities across the province, and they sort of did some great legwork towards coordination. So now this is a next step, if you will, and 30 communities will use a similar methodology across Canada. So yes, it's a major step, I think.
Now, data from the point-in-time counts are released, I imagine, locally, but I'm wondering if national data is released, and if so, what is done with it when it's released?
I'm not privy to what the plans are for the national level data. The Canadian Observatory on Homelessness will, of course, be looking at all of the pick count reports that come out, and it's to be determined exactly what to do with that information. At the local level, of course, it's up to communities to decide how and when to communicate the results, but already we're seeing some communities release their preliminary results. I think at a local level, I anticipate the communities will sit down and ask why. What is behind these numbers? Are these numbers what we anticipated? Are there certain subgroups overrepresented in the count, and why? And also, what's it going to take to rehouse every person that was counted? And I think those are questions that conversations we'll need to have nationally as well.
I read a number of articles in preparing for this interview. One of them was by Stanley Woodvine. He wrote in Vancouver for The Strait. He predicted that Canadians will be shocked by the results of the nationwide count, and he wrote especially by the bleak picture it paints of Aboriginal homelessness. What are your thoughts on this?
There's no way for us to know today what the results will be. I was reading a press release that, from the Nanaimo about the PIC count, and it said no amount of homelessness is acceptable. So I hope collectively that we are shocked, that we look at the numbers and say this isn't good enough. It's easy. Many of us acknowledge, I think, that homelessness is an issue in Canada. What's sometimes more difficult to acknowledge or to understand is that homelessness is an issue in our own communities or in our backyards. So I hope that PIC counts will counteract some of those beliefs and add to the discourse. And then, yeah, Indigenous homelessness can't be ignored. And that's what's interesting about the PIC count. It's more than just a count. It allows us to better understand who is experiencing homelessness. And we know from other research that Indigenous people across Canada are overrepresented among people experiencing homelessness. So let's collect the data. Let's acknowledge it. And I think the overrepresentation of Indigenous people has to be part of the narrative in discussing ending homelessness. Otherwise, we're not going to succeed. And so better data, I think, will only strengthen our response.
Jessie Donaldson is the National Point-in-Time Homelessness Count Coordinator. She works for the Canadian Observatory on Homelessness at York University. On February 9, 2016, the Nanaimo Homeless Coalition, in association with United Way Central and Northern Vancouver Island, and volunteers from the community, conducted a point-in-time homeless count to get an idea of the homeless population in Nanaimo. Nanaimo was one of the 30 communities across Canada to participate in the first ever nationally coordinated count of homelessness.
I spoke with John Horn, social planner for the city of Nanaimo, to find out more about Nanaimo's participation. Who conducts the point-in-time counts locally? How do they work in Nanaimo, for example?
The count in Nanaimo is conducted by the Nanaimo Homeless Coalition, and that's, as it sounds, is a coalition of service providers and interested parties and people who want to contribute to resolving homelessness in Nanaimo. So that's the group that conducts, and it's funded and supported by the federal government in this case. So it's really a combination of our local group using federal funding and guidelines.
I saw a report on Czech News that described what happened here in Nanaimo, and I saw a gymnasium being used and tables and people coming and going. How does it actually practically work? How are people contacted?
The way we decided to do it this time was to use a magnet event. And over the last several years, we've put on a lot of events for homeless people, so barbecues and Christmas dinners. And now we've got a pretty good methodology established for getting the word out amongst that group. And so we felt if we had a magnet event and people all came to us, A, they could get some services like free haircuts and these sort of things. And then B, it would be a lot better than tromping around in the woods on a rainy February afternoon looking for homeless people. So we thought we'd just try this slightly different methodology. It's been used in other places. And we think it was quite successful because I think we got most of the folks who were out there who were actually homeless. So I think most of them showed up at our magnet event. So that was the gymnasium, was where we invited them all to come and fed them and cut their hair. And we even did their nails and had all sorts of services there for them. So
what's been learned over the years in terms of the number of years that Nanaimo has been doing this?
We've been at this really, I think, with a really focused effort since about 2003 or 2004. And one of the things we're aware of is that it's kind of a complicated and stubborn problem, so that we don't have an expectation that you can readily or easily solve this. And you'll see that in other communities in BC, like Vancouver and Victoria, who've spent considerable money and quite a bit of effort to try to reduce the number of homeless in their communities, and yet they still have a significant, visible street population. So it's we've learned it's a pretty stubborn problem, and that there's not really any cheap and easy solutions.
John, what's been discovered from this year's point-in-time count, the one that just happened here in early 2016?
Sure. We conducted a count on February the 9th, and what we came up with was that we have at least 174 people who are currently experiencing homelessness in Nanaimo. And that includes those folks who are in the emergency shelters. We don't consider that to actually be housing. So we counted those folks. But that's the first thing we learned. We're at about 174 as your sort of basement floor, if you will. That's the minimum number of homeless people we have currently in Nanaimo.
What did you learn about them? Did you find out what their experience of homelessness has been, whether it's on the streets or couch surfing or in shelters?
Well, we did ask a number of questions. We have a couple of interesting angles. For example, we wanted to know gender and age breakdown, and right now the gender breakdown is roughly 70% male and 30% female. We asked people if they were with a partner, if they had children or anyone with them. The thing we learned was 83% of the respondents, that's those 174 folks, 83% of them are alone. So it's an insight into what it's like to be homeless. Most people are alone, you know. And then we did ask a couple of things about, like for the age categories, for example. We see that the biggest cohort of homeless folks is in the 35 to 44 age range. So if you look at the broader population of the city, you'll see that that's a big chunk of our population, just in a general sense, you know. So there's a mirror there that the homeless population sort of reflects the demographics of the broader population. And then that key group, 35 to 44, is where we saw the biggest cohort. There's other pieces we picked up along the way as well.
How will the results of this Nanaimo account impact policy or services moving forward? What do you anticipate?
Well, one thing we see is that the respondents in this survey, the people that we talked to are homeless, many had been homeless for a considerable length of time. So one thing that does come out of this is if we're going to try to provide support for people who are going to exit homelessness, it's going to have to be a fairly substantial amount of support, because if you've been homeless for more than a year, the chances are that something's holding you back from getting off the streets. So it's not going to be an easy problem to solve. So that's one thing, is that the complexity of any individual that we're trying to help, we recognize that after a year in the street or more, there's something that's going to be fairly robust response needed to get you off the streets. The other thing we asked was a little bit about how long people have lived here, and fully 70% of the people we talked to had lived here for more than a year. So that tells us a little bit that, sure, some people come here for the weather, such as it is, but that a lot of people are living here for a fair bit of time, more than a year, so they're local citizens. I would say that when we asked people why they were homeless, they gave a variety of responses, right? The biggest one, 40% of the respondents, said that they were unable to pay the rent. They were evicted because they were unable to pay the rent. And there may be stories behind that, of course, but it does tell us that the price of rental housing in the memo makes it a difficult thing for some folks to pay the rent. And so we know we don't have really control over rental costs. You know, that's just a market function. But it does speak to the need to really identify the way we can financially support people to stay in housing. And they may have other issues going on, but if they've been evicted because they can't pay the rent, then that's 40% of the homeless population that maybe could stay in housing if it was financially viable for them. So that's something we're going to have to take on board going forward.
John Horn, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us on this.
Oh, well, thank you for having me on.
John Horn is the City of Nanaimo's social planner. You can find out more about homelessness in Canada and the point-in-time homelessness count online at homelesshub.ca.
People First Radio is an initiative of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and broadcasts on CHLY 101.7, radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the partnering organizations. Listen to People First Radio on demand. Just Google People First Radio to find our web pages.